What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? Elvis Costello. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Voters in 12 states head to the polls today. 10 states are holding primaries. California, Iowa, Maine, Montana, Nevada, New Jersey, North Dakota, South Carolina, South Dakota, and Virginia. There's also a Senate runoff in Arkansas and a congressional runoff in North Georgia. Today, we look at one race in particular, the congressional race in Southern California's 36th district, where anti-war candidate, longtime activist and progressive Democrat Marcy Winograd is challenging the eight-term incumbent Jane Harman, a conservative Blue Dog Democrat. 4 years ago, Winograd challenged Harman and won more than 35% of the vote. This year, Marcy Winograd has challenged Harman on a number of issues, from the economy to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan to education, civil liberties, and U.S. foreign policy on Israel and Palestine. We invited Congressmember Jane Harman on the program for a debate with candidate Marcy Winograd, but Harman declined. Marcy Winograd has agreed to be with us. Her campaign is backed by a range of groups, including Democracy for America, founded by former DNC chair Howard Dean. Marcy Winograd joining us from Los Angeles. This is a big day for you, Marcy Winograd. Why did you choose to run again against Jane Harman?
Yes, thank you so much, Amy, for inviting me back on your show. The Winograd for Congress campaign is about a people-powered campaign to take back our Congress from its corporate stranglehold. And under that umbrella, I would say it is time for people to step forward and demand that their candidates and their representatives forsake corporate contributions. We have raised almost $500,000 from relatively small donations in an effort to not only end the corporate stranglehold on Congress, but to transition from a war economy to a job-rich green economy.
And what is different between this campaign, Marcy Winograd, and the campaign that you ran 4 years 4 years ago?
Amy, last time that I ran in 2006, I had just seen Jane Harman on Meet the Press attack the New York Times for finally telling the American public about the Bush administration's massive illegal wiretapping program. I jumped into the race 3 months before the primary, and in that short amount of time was able to mobilize almost 40% of the primary vote. This time, we have a very strong infrastructure to build on. We had over 800 volunteers. In addition, we had more time to reach out to diverse communities, specifically the Latino community, which makes up a large percentage of our voting population. And we had, I think, a message, an anti-corporate message that resonates at a time when people are tired of these bailouts and want something for themselves, something for the ordinary American who's working so hard and struggling to hold on to their job and their home.
This latest issue, the issue of the attack on the Gaza flotilla that ended up killing 9 of the activists on board. Your position on this and your opponents?
Well, when this happened, I published a press release denouncing what had happened, calling for an international investigation into the deaths of these activists, and ultimately for an end to the blockade, because that's what this effort was all about, was breaking that blockade and providing humanitarian aid to over 1 million Palestinians who are regularly denied clean water and medicine. My opponent was silent for many hours, for days following that assault. And I then issued a second press release condemning her and for her silence and urging her to break her silence and call with me for an international investigation into what happened and for an end to the brutal blockade of Gaza. After a few days, she did issue a press release. She didn't say what type of investigation. She said there should be some sort of investigation, though she did say that the boats should be allowed to go through.
And
my opponent, I have said that she's in the pocket of AIPAC, which she has demonstrated in the past.
The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, how do you differ?
Despite what my opponent says, she continues to vote to escalate in Afghanistan, to send more troops to Iraq. From the beginning, from before the invasion of Iraq, I have been very visible on the street corner with neighborhood peace vigils, organizing within the California Democratic Party, co-writing, co-authoring resolutions, putting our party on record, calling for an end to the U.S. wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And running a campaign in 06, an anti-war candidacy. My opponent, you know, despite the barrage of protests that were emailed, that were phoned into her office prior to the invasion, she voted against a majority of House Democrats to take us to war in Iraq. This at a time when she was the ranking minority member on the House Intelligence Committee, when she should have known better. She could have read the National Intelligence Estimate. Perhaps she did and didn't care. I don't know. But in that report, which was a synthesis of intelligence from 16 different agencies, it said very clearly, boxed and highlighted, that reports of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq were highly dubious. So she took us to war in Iraq. She votes, despite what she says, to escalate in Afghanistan. More recently, she appeared on Fox News to threaten Iran with a military attack, and she repeatedly talks about the next front being Yemen. In one of my mailers, I said, let's follow the money. My opponent, Jane Harman, has up to $8 million invested in the weapons industry, and she has yet to recuse herself on a supplemental war appropriation. That's wrong.
So you disagree with President Obama over the surge in Afghanistan?
Yes, I don't think that there is a military solution in Afghanistan. I think we have seen that in the last several years. What has come? What has come of this occupation, this war? Only more war. In fact, we serve as a recruiting tool for terrorists. Each time we drop a bomb or send a drone to drop bombs on innocent people who are maybe not targeted, but become casualties in this never-ending, perpetual war. It's time to break out of this cycle and to challenge the economic engine driving this. And that's why I talk about the importance of transitioning to a new green economy where we can double the number of jobs if we invest in mass transit as opposed to investing in war.
Marcy Winograd, we only have 10 seconds, but do you think President Obama has dealt with the BP oil spill adequately?
I have called repeatedly for a National Environmental Corps, and I hope that President Obama will be the catalyst for this.
We're going to have to leave it there.
I
thank you very much for being with us, Marcy Winograd, progressive Democrat running for the Democratic nomination in Southern California's 36th District. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, what's going on? It's DJ Ev with your WUSB Concert Billboard for Tuesday, June 8th. Les Claypool at Brooklyn Bowl, and at the Bowery Ballroom, it's the Future Heads. Rhythm Kings acoustic duo are at Fat Fish. Looking ahead to Wednesday the 9th, James O'Malley with Caroline Doctorow benefit concert for Wounded Warriors Project, 8 to 10, out at the Stephen Talkhouse. Thursday the 10th, open mic night with Tom Groney, 930 Sage Cafe, and at the Bowery Ballroom, it's Junip, Jose Gonzalez, Elias Araya, and Tobias Winterkorn. Friday the 11th, Ladin Wainwright III at Bolton Center, Stephen Wright, West Hampton Beach Performing Arts Center, and at 10:30 at Sage Cafe, it's the Ed Travers Band. The Rhythm Kings acoustic duo are at Four Doors Down, and at Nikon Jones Beach Theater, Jethro Tull and Procol Harum. WUSB's own Ahmad Ali, 8 p.m. Athens Grill, also at 8 at Fiddlehead's Gale Storm Band. Saturday the 12th, Gladys Knight Theater at Westbury, The Hotline, Terry G's, and at Barbecue at 9, Lonesome Dan and the Curmudgeons. Brian Adams Acoustic, West Hampton Beach Performing Arts Center, The Forensics, 10:30 Sage Cafe. From 1 to 5, Funk Applied at the Jamesport Vineyard. Ossie Del Moore and the Soldiers of Justice, 9 p.m. to midnight, Wicked Willies. And at Webster Hall, Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. The Rhythm Kings Acoustic Duo at Fat Fish. And at 4, WSB's own Ahmad Ali at the Northside Lobster Roll. 9 p.m. Mr. Beery's This'll Kill Ya, Family Lumber, Butterscotch Stanley, and We're All Just Passing Through. And at 10:30 at Lefty's in Lindenhurst, Half Step, performing in its entirety the Grateful Dead's May 28th, 1977 tour closing show in Hartford, Connecticut. And Sunday the 13th, Funk Applied, Jamesport Winery, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., Mean Clowns, 1 p.m., Livorno Restaurant, Slick Rick Knitting Factory, Brooklyn, Ossie Del Moore and the Soldiers of Justice back at Wicked Willie's, the Rhythm Kings at Popeye's in Corum, and the Doug Gordon Band at the Stephen Talkhouse. And if you're a local venue, band, or promoter and you want to get your gig on the concert billboard, send an email to scene@wusb.fm. And as always, thanks for listening to the concert billboard right here on WUSB Stony Brook.
Yes, it is WUSB Stony Brook, isn't it? 4 minutes after 6 o'clock, time once again for another exciting edition of Off the Wall. And the very good thing for everybody, the program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, live this week. This is the first, I guess, normal show in a while, because we've had a bunch of pre-recorded episodes. All kinds of people wandering through the studio. And tonight is, I guess, the first... I say normal as I'm watching the dancers moving in and the drummer's all recovered from his injury from the last time, or the second, 2 times ago when we tried this. But tonight is another installment of The Quest for Starbucks, where we bring the number down to, was it 64? Okay, we're at 128 now. And if you go to thefirststarbucks.com, you'll see the list of potential Starbucks, which would be the first one that I ever visited in my life when we finally get down to one. And tonight, we cut the number in half from 128 to 64. But it's a whole big production, and they're setting up microphones inside, and we'll be getting to that. And the drummer looks good, I'll say that. He suffered a kick to the head from one of the drummers, one of the dancers a few weeks ago, a couple of months ago, actually. But wasn't in for the last episode, but looks good. Looks, whatever you've been doing, it's looks like you've been working out. It's, I don't know if you can even hear me, but... Okay, I'm looking forward to this. Looking forward to bringing the number down. Things are starting to get interesting. We can actually start listing cities now and looking at the possibilities. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Hopefully we'll also get to some phone calls tonight. That would be nice to hear from our listeners, to know they're still out there. And to hear some of the stories of things that have been going on. Some fun things, I'm sure. As summer approaches... people are doing more things outdoors, and all kinds of misadventures and fun things happen as a result. We have a lot to talk about, a lot of world events, things like that, and I'd love to hear people's feedback on that. As always, you can write to us, otw@2600.com, and we'll be happy to to read your mail, to consider your suggestions or demands or various things like that. This is the time of year, though, where everything just sort of is emerging. You see all kinds of wildlife walking around in places probably they shouldn't walk around, like inside your house sometimes. Nothing like that for me this so far. Anyway, usually there's at least one episode of something startling happening, such as raccoons getting inside or something like that. I had an adventure with a firefly. Yeah, there was a firefly in my shower. Now, you know, there's something about fireflies I've always liked, apart from the fact that they give off that nice little light at night. And this is about the time of year where you start to see them in Long Island. When the sun goes down, simply walk around, you'll start seeing fireflies everywhere, or lightning bugs, as they're called in some places. There's something about fireflies, though. They're very friendly. They're the friendliest insect I know. And by that, I mean, if you hold out your hand and there's a firefly nearby, he will land on it. He will always land on your hand. I don't know why they do that. But there's no other insect that will be so forthcoming, I guess, or just social. So yeah, that's why it's always easy to catch fireflies. And so I saw this firefly crawling around at the bottom of the shower, and I have this thing. I don't like killing insects even. I don't like killing any kind of creature, but even insects, you have to really piss me off to get to the point where I'm going to squish you or flush you down the toilet or something like that. And when I realized this was a firefly, and it wasn't easy to realize right away because he looked kind of dragon-like at first with his legs and wings all spread out. When I realized he was a firefly, it was pretty simple. I just held out my hand and he hopped aboard and we walked to the front door and I let him go. And he was pretty happy, probably spreading light and cheer throughout the land. So I don't know, how many people actually do that? How many people actually go out of their way to rescue insects? You know? Well, insects that I feel deserve better. Now, if I see a roach, okay, that's different. Obviously, that's different. Fortunately, that hasn't happened. Spiders, though? I like spiders. I know they're not insects, so don't even start the emails about that. I know they're not insects, but I do like spiders, and so many people are afraid of spiders, really afraid of spiders. I'm not really sure why. Maybe the eight legs or just the creepy crawly thing going on. Phobias are weird. People are afraid of caterpillars. People are afraid of houseflies. But spiders, I like spiders because they tend to keep things in check. And they tend to, I guess, keep the other insects from getting to the point where they annoy me. Yeah, I don't mind. I don't mind carnage going on within the animal kingdom, as long as I don't have to know about it. Whatever the spiders are doing to the fireflies or the moths or the ants or the bees, you know, I'm just going to turn a blind eye to it. I think that's fair. I think that's the way it should be. That's natural. So yeah, I got him out of the house, and I think you know, this week seems to be the week of the moths. Moths are everywhere all of a sudden. You know, you turn on the light instantly, there's three moths running to the light bulb. You know, and I have to wonder, when there are no light bulbs, there are still moths. What are they waiting for? The moon to rise, or I don't get it. You know, they're always there immediately. You turn on a light outside and a billion moths suddenly start flying towards it. But if you don't do that, what do they do with their evening? It's something I've always wondered, and I can't find answers on Wikipedia about that. So, that's some of what's going on out there with wildlife and spring turning into summer and all kinds of fun things like that. It's different in different parts of the world. You see different kinds of wildlife, and you interact with it differently, obviously. Of course, we've got the human type here, which, oh my god. Humans, I think, annoy me more than then I didn't mean to be staring someone straight in the face when I said that. But no, humans do annoy me a lot. I think they annoy most other humans too. But sometimes they just... It's ineptitude more than anything else. It's not downright hostility. It's just stupidity. I think that's what gets me. Case in point, this happened actually a few weeks ago, where I was watching my favorite TV channel, which is Euronews on Cablevision here, the only place that seems to get it. And I noticed that about every couple of minutes or so, the audio would blank out for about 5 seconds. Like every 2 minutes, 5 seconds of silence. That was annoying. That annoyed me. I figured somebody would fix it after a while, but a couple days went by, nobody touched it. It was still doing it. So I contacted a friend of mine who lives in another state, but still has cable vision. So I asked, can you turn on channel 103 and see if you're getting an audio glitch every couple of minutes? And sure enough, he was. 5 seconds of silence every couple of minutes on Euronews. No other channel, just that one. So I called up Cablevision. Waited on hold for a good long time. I know. I was expecting to do that. No problem. Finally, representative comes on. Before you can even start speaking to them, you have to answer all the questions. I'm going to give you a list of 4 streets. Which one did you live on? All right. Your mother's maiden name is one of the following. And, you know, this is just to get to talk to them about something that doesn't even affect your account. So as soon as I got past that hurdle, I said, listen, this is something that's network-wide. This is affecting every subscriber. You have a problem on channel 103. It's an audio glitch every couple of minutes, 5 seconds. Can you please have somebody look into that? Yes, sir. I'm going to need to dispatch a technician to deal with this. And I was like, to my house? No, you don't understand. This is something that's affecting everybody on your network. Not just me, everybody. Yes, I understand that, sir, but the only way that we can determine that is by eliminating the customer as the problem. I think those were the exact words. But she said, she assured me that they're going to check into this. And as soon as they realize that it's not the customer, they will cancel the appointment. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. This is how you do business? Okay, fine. You know what? Send technicians to Mars if you want to. I'm not going to be home anytime. So just do whatever you have to do. Just please get this fixed. And she assured me that this would just take care of itself. Well, a couple of days later, actually, it did take care of itself. The audio glitch was gone, and I was happy. Then a week later, I got a call from Cablevision saying that I had missed my appointment. And ever since then, there have been people knocking on the door, leaving notes, calls, which I have not answered because, well, I'm not around when they come in, and I'm not going to call them back and wait on hold to tell them that they're idiots. But this is how it works. This is how inept these companies are. That the only way they know how to fix a problem, which is so simple to fix, it was probably just resetting a router or something like that, they have to make telephone calls and send people out on wild goose chases for problems that are so simple to fix, yet they cannot comprehend. And I realized, you know, there's nobody to even complain to. If I called somebody at that same company, they wouldn't understand what I was talking about. So I'm content. I'm content having them make completely fruitless attempts to reach me because I made it clear to them. I explained it to them. And they record my phone call for quality assurance. Well, they should listen to that phone call and see just what it was I was explaining to them. Yeah. I had another adventure with DirecTV, which is a satellite company. And I do have both. And there is this issue with, this happens in the spring too. Leaves come out and trees block the view. So I called them to have them check to see if that was in fact the problem, because I hadn't been the problem for a few years. I wanted them to go and look and measure things and see if in fact there was an issue with leaves blocking the signal. And since I have this kind of a plan where that's covered, I figured, why not take advantage of it? Well, when I had the person on the phone, they were, became very aggressive as far as upgrading me to their HD program. And I told them, well, you know, there are so many trees around. What are the odds? What are the odds of me being able to see a second satellite? I can barely see this one. In fact, I can't see this one right now, I don't think. That's what I need to verify. So upgrading me to a service where I have to find another satellite, which is probably, you know, at the base of a tree where I happen to be, it doesn't make much sense. They were so aggressive. It annoyed me so much that I said, you know what? Okay. All right, let's do it. Because I knew they'd be wasting their time. And sure enough, several days later when the guy finally made it out, he was laughing. You can never see that satellite. Even if you cut 20 feet off of all your trees, you will never, ever be able to see that. So I wasted another corporation's time out of spite because they were wasting my time. All I wanted to do was make an appointment, and I had to sit through this whole big sales pitch. Ever try renewing a credit card? You call up, and all you have to do is enter the numbers. They always keep you on the phone long afterwards trying to sell you some identity theft protection service or some kind of fraud thing that they'll scare you into getting. And you have to stay on the phone because you're not sure if your credit card's turned on or not. So you're stuck there. That's the same thing. It's the same thing. How many times have you been on the phone where somebody on the other end just does not seem to want to end the conversation? Sir, have I provided you with excellent service today? Do you mind if you ask a few questions for a purpose of a survey? And it just goes on forever and ever and ever. Is there anything else I can help you with? Are you aware of our discounted service plan for valued customers like yourself? It should not be considered rude to just hang up after you get what you want without saying a single word. And, you know, I'm not the kind of person that likes to do that, but they drove me to it. In the TV world, people are always doing that. You ever see this? Tony Soprano is talking to somebody on the phone. He says, did you get that package? Yeah, it just arrived. Click. He doesn't even say goodbye. Just hangs up. You know, if I did that, I'd get a call back saying, dude, why'd you hang up on me? Can you imagine someone doing that on TV? Yeah, people are always just hanging up on each other when they get the information they need. And maybe that's a better way to live. It's worth thinking about. All right. Okay, I think we're almost ready. Looks like they're getting just about completely set up in there, which is great. I'm looking forward to getting the numbers down to a point where I can actually get this over with. We've been doing this, I think, since January, actually. Cutting down the number of Starbucks to a manageable number. We started with, I think, about 10,000, and now we're down to 128. Okay. All right. I'm told we're just about ready to go. Let's make sure there's enough space between the dancers and the drummer this time so that we don't have a repeat. And you want to give us a few licks off because – oh, yeah. Good. Okay. You sound much better. Much better. Okay. Wow. Listen to them go. That's okay. All right. Okay. All right. All right. All right. This is good. This is good. But the dancers are ready to. In fact, the dancers are going now. Yeah, they've started. Please. I don't think you can hear me. I'm just going to turn all of you down. It's the quest for Starbucks where we narrow down the list of potential Starbucks, which will be my first ever tour visit. Somehow I've lived my entire life without ever walking into a Starbucks. And I'd really like to end that. And this is really kind of awkward here. Can someone shut him up? Yeah, I know you've missed playing the drums all this time, but okay, watch out for the feet. Alright, it's still going. I can't believe this. You're not winning any friends with the dancers there because you're sort of stealing the show from them. Oh boy. I'm just going to turn this down, and let's pretend we have just a drum roll here. Pressing the button, and we are down to 64 as of this moment. If you hear me, but we're down to 64 as of this moment, and the dancers, I think they just want to get out of here at this point. So do I. Oh boy. Okay, I apologize for this. I don't know. Maybe we need better communication between studios, but you're supposed to give us the one roll of the drums and not this whole big flourish here. Okay, I'm looking at this at the screen now of what we are down to and what we had before. I'm trying to compare the two here. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I know. Yeah, she's really. I'm not happy. This is just confusing everybody. All right, we I can see we still have a Starbucks in New York that I might go to. Okay, here we go. Final flourish. And he's still going. This is insane. We have two in Edmonton. I'm looking at last week. We have one in Edmonton. Okay, it's gone down to one in Edmonton. We had three in Guadalajara, Mexico. Now it's down to two. We still have that one in New York, as I mentioned. We have San Diego. We have one in Seattle. Two in Washington, D.C. still. What are the foreign ones? I know we said, can we just cut the... This is insane. It's look at him going there. He's getting all red in the face. He's going to have a heart attack or something. You know, next time we start this early and we just have a dry run, because it just seems like we're not communicating. I don't blame the dancers for being angry. They got totally upstaged today. Dubai, United Arab Emirates, they're still in the running. As I mentioned, Edmonton is two in Hong Kong. Bremen, Germany, Burnaby, B.C. in Canada, Santa Rosa City in the Philippines, Taguig in the Philippines. There's one in Toronto. There's one in Vancouver. Vienna in Austria. They're still in the running. And Paris, France, I see. Yeah, this is still a lot of international possibilities here. But, of course, we also have a bunch in the United States. We have Fresno, California, Fair Oaks, California, Denver, Cincinnati, College Park, Maryland, Anaheim, California, Antioch, California, Oklahoma City, Oakland, Sacramento, Sparks, Nevada. A full list will be posted on thefirststarbucks.com. And our next drawing, if they agree to come back, is in 2 weeks. So, We're getting to the stage where it's we're going to start actually thinking of where we're going to have to book tickets to, unless it's in New York, in which case we just have to book a train ticket. Okay, let's see what's happening in the world. All kinds of fun things. Of course, the oil disaster, which I don't think we've talked about at all, because that's been happening during our crazy shows where we just haven't had a moment. We were in Slovenia last week. Actually, this is an interesting story. We talked about this during last week's show, during the recording that we made while riding in a car from Slovenia to Croatia. And it turns out that the border dispute that we made a reference to is in the news. Yeah, there was a referendum in Slovenia, and Slovenians have narrowly voted in favor of accepting a deal on a border dispute with Croatia in a national referendum. Yeah, that took place since last week's show. It's entirely possible that that narrow difference in votes, that margin, could be because of off-the-wall listeners who realized how silly border disputes are and how nice it would be for Croatia to join the EU along with Slovenia. They've narrowly voted in favor of accepting a deal on a border dispute with Croatia. The agreement allows international arbitrators to resolve the issue. The border dispute concerns the small Bay of Piran in the Adriatic Sea and dates back to the breakup of Yugoslavia in 1991. It soured relations between the two countries and led Slovenia to block Croatia's bid to join the EU. So in the past, Croatia has called for the border to be drawn down the middle of the bay, but Slovenia, which has a much shorter coastline than its neighbor, had feared this would deny its ships direct passage to the high seas. Slovenia exercised its veto on Croatia's EU accession talks because it said Croatia had provided maps and documents and negotiations that failed to take account of Slovenia's position. Croatia hopes to become the second former Yugoslav state to join the EU in 2012. That would be something. Yeah, right now, Slovenia is part of the EU. They use the euro, and they really have made incredible strides. So it would be interesting to see the rest of the former Yugoslavia do the same thing. But okay, that was in the news, and that was really interesting to see. The oil thing, oh my God, just keeps getting worse. Just keeps getting worse. Now they're saying it's going to be months, even years, before this thing is controlled. I'm, of course, referring to the incredible spillage taking place thanks to BP and their negligence. And it is negligence. There's just no other way to look at this, because if you're going to have an oil well so far below the sea, you really need to know how to work a problem like this, how to deal with a catastrophe. And all I'm hearing is that this has never happened before, and it's all new ground for them. And this is something that they have to figure out as they go. They should have had this figured out from the start. You don't get to do this kind of thing unless you have a plan for disasters. And they clearly did not. And of course, anybody who gave them the okay to go ahead and do this is equally guilty. And I think we're starting to see how poisonous the relationship was that had the government so close to the oil companies. We're starting to see this now. I mean, a lot of us have seen this for many, many years, but now we're starting to see the direct, dirty evidence of it. And it's great to see these Republicans questioning Obama as far as is he doing enough? Is he doing enough to control the oil companies? These are the same people that wanted the oil companies not to be controlled at all, to give them whatever they wanted. Less government control and more corporate responsibility. Yeah. How's that working out for you? But it's incredible that they're actually playing that card and expecting people to fall for it. And I'm sure a lot of people will fall for it. I'm sure a lot of people are going to say, yeah, Obama, you could have stopped this. You could have done something with your superpowers. And how dare you? The former attorney general was talking about how if somebody committed a crime against me, I hope that they wouldn't wait 5 weeks to do something about it, implying that Obama has not done anything in the last few weeks, which is simply not true. If you look at what he actually is doing and saying, and who he's talking to, and holding them accountable, it's nice to see somebody who represents your country speaking out against the oil companies, accusing them of lying, accusing them of doing horrible things and of having it way too easy, and promising that they will be held accountable 100% and that criminal prosecutions are indeed possible and things like that. Do you honestly think you would have heard anything like that with the Bush administration? No way. And probably not any of the administrations before that either. So, yeah, it's amazing how desperate they can be sometimes, calling it Obama's Katrina. Well, you know, it's not quite the same thing, is it? This one is 100% man-made. And it just keeps getting worse. You know, it's almost like we're giving up and saying, you know what, beaches are a thing of the past, clean water a thing of the past, fish, yeah, it's all gone. It's pretty sad, and nobody really knows how it's going to end. But one thing is for sure, if BP is still in business by the end of this year, there is something seriously wrong, because they certainly do not deserve to be in business. And yeah, this could happen to any oil company, that is true. I guess luck of the draw. But the fact of the matter is, it happened to them. They're the ones responsible. They're the ones that need to throw every resource that they have and borrow those that they don't at this problem. And nothing else is acceptable. One thing that I keep hearing, which disturbs me, is that BP is saying, we have our finest engineers working on this. Okay, that's great, but you know what? If it was Exxon, or if it was Sunoco, or if it was one of those other companies, they would have their best engineers working on it. Why don't you get all the best engineers together? Why don't you hire those guys away from those companies temporarily so that you have a much bigger workforce? Is the reason because you don't want to hire more people? Is that the reason? Well, you know what? That's no longer an option, because you're going to hire everybody it takes to get this done, or Obama's going to kick your ass. Yeah. All right. You hear about this? Longtime White House reporter Helen Thomas has retired effective immediately. This happened yesterday. This was announced yesterday. Thomas, 89 years old, was considered the dean of the White House press corps, as she was the longest-serving White House journalist. She's been reporting on administrations since 1960, when she began covering then-President-elect John F. Kennedy and his family. Thomas came under fire late last week when a YouTube video surfaced showing her saying that Israel should get the hell out of Palestine and that the Jewish people should go home to Poland, Germany, and America and everywhere else. Now, Thomas has apologized for her remarks. They do not reflect my heartfelt belief that peace will come to the Middle East only when all parties recognize the need for mutual respect and tolerance. May that day come soon, she wrote. But the apology was not enough to silence critics. Here's the thing. When I first heard about this, I first heard that Helen Thomas was forced to resign after saying controversial things about Jews. And it's like, I could not believe it. Again, you know, how often do things like this happen? Where somebody says something stupid about black people, about Jewish people, about some particular minority. And it's like the memo just has not been seen. How dumb can people possibly be? And I was thinking, you know, what if we just have a contest where people just come up with the thing to say, since it seems to be so in style to come up with controversial remarks, but concerning particular people. Why don't we all just see how good we can get at it? Because everyone else seems to be doing it. And I thought about it. What would I say about this particular situation, the Israeli situation and their future and their past and things like that? And, you know, it's, I got to say, some of it is kind of parallel to what she was saying. That, yeah, they should get the hell out of a particular area that they're obviously not making any friends in. Obviously not doing any good in. Anyway, let's continue with this story. We can go into this a little bit more. Her apology was not enough to silence critics, who began a rising chorus of calls for Thomas either to be terminated, oh my, or suspended by Hearst Publications, which I guess she was, because she's no longer working for them. The board of the White House Correspondents Association released a statement condemning her remarks. They called her remarks indefensible. Many in our profession who have known Helen for years were saddened by the comments, which were especially unfortunate in light of her role as a trailblazer on the White House beat. White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs also jumped into the fray, saying, "Those remarks were offensive and reprehensible. I think she should and has apologized, because obviously those remarks do not reflect certainly the opinion of, I assume, most of the people in here, and certainly not of the administration." Now, what exactly did she say? Well, okay, quoting from the video, I guess. And, of course, we should also keep in mind she's of Lebanese descent. She made the remarks to Rabbi David Nesanoff of RabbiLive.com. RabbiLive.com, yes. It was such a place. He said his handheld camera was in plain sight on May 27th when he asked her, any comments on Israel? Tell them to get the hell out of Palestine, she responded. Okay, you know, let's think about this. You have a country occupying another country. And that is definitely the case because this has happened within the last 100 years. And, you know, I'm not even going to get into the whole promised people and historical Holy Land nonsense. The fact of the matter is this country was formed in the last 100 years and is occupying a land that was lived in by other people, period. Now, does that mean you say Israel must cease to exist? That's a whole different thing. But certainly the government, as it is now, is very unpopular throughout the world. There's something seriously wrong, and especially in light of what happened in the last couple of weeks, where a peaceful, for the most part peaceful, flotilla of boats delivering aid to the Gaza Strip was attacked by the Israeli Navy. 9 people killed. Now, from what I've seen, there were people fighting back on the Turkish ship, I believe, which is where the fatalities occurred. However, initially, when this was being reported by Israel, they said that there were guns, and there were no guns. Guns were never found. Now they're saying that guns were taken from the Israeli Navy. You know, that's not really easy to do. but if that's their story, okay, whatever. Point is, if a bunch of people jump out of the sky and do things that you don't like, maybe they were spraying them with tear gas or clubbing them somehow. I don't know. I wasn't there. But it's not beyond the realm of possibility for people to start fighting back and start pushing people or hitting them with sticks or whatever. Does that excuse killing 9 people? Especially when you knew they were coming. And this took place in international waters. The most recent thing is Israel rejecting the call for an independent investigation. No, we're not going to allow an independent investigation. We're just going to tell you our version, and that's the only version that's going to exist. Yeah, you know what? There's a problem with this country. A big problem. And if they can't figure out how to live in a civilized world, then maybe they should not be around. Not in their current state. We say the same thing about Iran. We say the same thing about North Korea. We call them rogue states. How is it any less rogue to be basically setting your own rules and playing your own game and saying to hell with the rest of the world? So, yeah, you know, big problems here. Big problems, and they're the ones that will be hurt the most by these big problems in the end. Anyway, continuing with what Helen Thomas said. Okay, so she said, tell them to get the hell out of Palestine, which I think is an understandable thing to say in light of what just happened. Any better comments on Israel? Any better comments on Israel? That's a strange question. Nesenov asked that. Thomas replied, remember, these people are occupied and it's their land. It's not German. It's not Poland. Nesenov asked where the Jews should go, and Thomas responded, they should go home, which the White House reporter identified as Poland, Germany, and America, and everywhere else. Now, this is a story about the power of video, Nesenov said on Monday. The issue was anti-Semitism. Within 24 hours, over 1 million views, we find out that someone who's been reporting for 60 years, this is what she's about. Yeah, you know, I think that's a bit of a reach. First of all, anti-Israeli sentiment has nothing to do with anti-Semitism. It does not. Because, believe it or not, the Israelis are not the only Semitics in the region, for one thing. But apart from that, it's not an attack on Jewish people to attack Israeli policy. In fact, there are many people within Israel attacking Israeli policy. So you have a whole lot of anti-Semitic Jews in there. Now, it's just not the same thing, what she has said here. And I think people are being a bit unfair, saying that they've known this person for 60 years and are so quick to take these remarks and interpret them in the worst possible way. Now, listen to what former special counsel to to former President Bill Clinton said, if she had asked all blacks to go back to Africa, what would the White House Correspondents Association position be as to whether she deserved White House press room credentials, much less a privileged honorary seat? Ari Fleischer, the former press secretary for George W. Bush, said Helen's statement calling for the religious cleansing of Israel is reprehensible. Okay, Ari, those are your words, not her words. She never said that. If this isn't bigotry, what is? What she said is as bad as someone saying all blacks should leave America and go back to Africa. No, you know what? It's totally different. Because for one thing, it was not an invasion. Black people were brought to this country against their will. Kind of a different story. It wasn't moving people into a particular land and saying, this is now our land. Very, very different. And by saying this, people have skipped over the actual positive thing that she's saying here, which I'm going to assume. I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt and assume that she meant this in a somewhat positive way, on a humanity level, something that we've actually mentioned in the past on this particular program, is that the Jewish home is not just one small region in the Mideast. It's everywhere. And when I walked around in Poland and in Romania and various other places where the Jewish population has been decimated after World War II, where there's literally a handful left, I consider that to be wrong. I think people need to go back there because that was their home, and that is a place that they have every right to live in, and it's a place that should not be off limits. By basically moving everybody to one little region and making it hell on earth, I don't know. You know, I think the Nazis would be getting a chuckle out of that because they got what they wanted. They got rid of them in all these parts of Europe and they didn't come back. Well, I think they should come back. I think they should come back in force. And I think they should be powerful voices in government. And I think it's their home. Now, if you interpret her remarks that way, they should go home. They should stop this nonsense of fighting Palestinians and killing people on ships and things like that. Well, you know, it takes on a different light. I don't think she called for the abolition of Israel either, which is what everybody seems to be eager to accuse her of doing. Anyway, that's my take on it. It just bugs me to see people jump on somebody so quickly and interpret remarks in as negative a way as possible. If you know somebody for that long period of time, you have to assume that they're speaking out of frustration, out of anger, that they're basically a decent person, that maybe they didn't get the words quite right. I think that's the real injustice here, is how people are lining up to take pot shots. And she's 89 years old, for God's sake. Give her a break. Let her at least explain herself. Not tarnish an entire career based on some remarks that are said in anger. All right, if anyone wants to give a call, 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. And if we see some calls come in, we'll hop into delay and see what people are up to. Another great injustice here. A court in central India ruled yesterday that 8 top executives of the now-defunct Union Carbide's Indian subsidiary are guilty for their role in the 1984 industrial disaster that killed thousands in Bhopal, India. Now, imagine this. Imagine that all of a sudden all this poison gas is released into your neighborhood and thousands of people just die, just like that. Wouldn't you hold that company accountable? Well, yeah, you know, they should be held accountable because somebody definitely did something very criminal to even allow that kind of situation to be set up in the first place. The leaking of poisonous gas from the local plant of the American Chemical Company was one of the world's worst industrial disasters. Sounds familiar, huh? Plaintiffs have waited more than 2 decades for the verdict. 2 decades. But you know what? I guess waiting that long for justice, it's got to be worth the wait, right? I mean, you hold on and you keep pressing, you keep pressuring them to be accountable. And eventually you get your day in court. The executives could face a jail term of, ready? Up to 2 years. 2 years, yeah. Wow, 2 years. After 20 years of living in their Westchester mansions or whatever these people live, now they're facing 2 years in jail for their role in killing thousands through negligence, through not having safety concerns, through assuming that people in India just don't count. Up to 2 years. Well, that'll teach them. That'll teach them, and that'll teach all the future executives. And not only that, they could also be required to pay a fine. What is that, up to $25? What? How much? They don't say, but my God. Nearly 4,000 people died instantly when a milky fog of isocyanate, the chemical used to produce pesticides, escaped from the company's plant in Bhopal in December 1984. More than 10,000 other deaths have been blamed on related illnesses. And so many other people are suffering as a result. Yeah, that's the world for you. That's why we've been having pre-recorded programs. No, we like talking about this kind of thing. We really do. Right now, okay, let's take some phone calls. Let's listen Father Guido Sarducci here, and we'll be back in just a moment.
This is Father Guido Sarducci warning you that you listen to WSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. Got it?
All right, we are back. Ready to take phone calls. 631-632-9872. And shall we just go into the phones? All right, let's go to the phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Speak up.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are you? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Manorville.
Manorville, out east. What's on your mind? You got to turn down the radio or you get very confused.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, okay, basically, I was listening to what you're saying about the Jewish population in Israel going back to Europe because that's where they came from.
Well, that's not exactly what I said. Basically saying that all the cards should not be in one deck. Basically, Jews should be everywhere, not just in Israel. That's what I was saying.
Yeah, well, the problem is that we are living on Indian land. If you use that theology or theory, we should all go back to wherever we come from. What's your ethnology?
Well, okay, that's definitely something to think about. I would say that we are an established presence here, just as Jews are an established presence in Israel. I don't think anybody is saying all Jews must leave Israel, but we certainly should be giving Native Americans a lot more say in what's going on around us. They should be part of the government. They should be. They should have their own TV networks. They should have their own newspapers. They should not be living in poverty. And by the same token, we should not simply be taking every Western European and transplanting them to the United States. That's not fair either.
The fact is that Israel has existed for X amount of years. What is the cutoff? And at what time? 100 years? 75 years? 200 years? Should everybody move back to where they came from?
No, clearly not. Clearly not. And obviously, if they had taken over the entire land and there was nobody else left except Israelis, then it would be a moot point. But those other people are still there, and they are oppressed. They are occupied. That can't go on forever. It's not going to work. It has not worked. So clearly, it's...
Same thing in every colonized country. I mean, you were talking about an era of colonization. I mean, they went there as refugees and fought wars when they tried to be displaced because of basically religious beliefs. They are existing by the skin of their teeth, and what they're doing, or what they seem to be doing, is trying to exist. If anyone convinced the people around them who have been attacking them for the last 70 years or 60 years were to stop aggression, I don't believe that Israel would be aggressive. I don't think they're trying to take more land. I think they're trying to exist, and they're trying to put a buffer zone around their country.
Okay, but you see, when they do things like attack unarmed ships and kill people, that kind of doesn't make that argument very strong. You know,
my argument is in what we've been doing and what every country has been doing has been protecting itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a country in existence for X amount of years. What I'm saying to you, if we use your theory, what is the cutoff? Is it 75 years? Is it 100 years?
It says as long as people are still there from other cultures. What I saw when I went to former Yugoslavia with Kosovo, that was a country where mostly Albanians are living. So therefore, they should have more of a say in what's going on in their country, not Serbians, who are a minority there. So you basically have to balance these things out. You don't cleanse anybody. You don't kick people out of any land if they're already living there. But you have to have some kind of a balance. You can't just simply have one group dictating policy to the other group. It does not work.
Well, the fact is, if the people who are in the country are disguised insurgents who are trying to bring down the government, you would think that that government has the right to protect itself.
Yeah, but that's a generalization. That's a gross generalization. Just like saying that all Israelis are evil is a gross generalization.
You have to come to some kind of answer. I mean, it has to really stop on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Simultaneously. It can't stop on one side or the other, because the other will take advantage of the situation. So both sides have to stop their aggression.
Well, I agree with that. But listen, we're going to move on to one more call. Thanks for your call. Let's see who else is there. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Make it quick.
Oh, man, the Israeli, the Zionists, when that split started, Eric, okay.
We don't really have time to get into it historically.
I'm saying it could have been that we're talking about different political philosophies like socialist versus the reactionary, I think that's going on.
You've got the last word here.
Saying bringing up Nazis every single week for the past year. Like, does he want there to be, Jews put in, calling America fascist, calling Hitler a fascist? I mean, what kind of insanity is going on? Can you please dissect Glenn Beck one week, Eric?
I'll try that. I'll try to dissect Glenn Beck as long as he's conscious while I'm doing it.
All right.
Okay, we're out of time, unfortunately. That's just the way it goes. We certainly opened up a kettle of fish with that, didn't we? Write to us, please. otw@2600.com. That is, our email address. We'd certainly like to, hear from you and, get all kinds of interesting discussions started. Next week, though, might be a Bosnia show. I'm not exactly, certain if that's the case. We're still going through our travels to, former Yugoslavia. Again, check the firststarbucks.com to see the list of now 64 that we're down to as this gets more and more interesting and contentious. All right, mashup time. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Beef is not what Jay said to Nas. Beef is when the working folks can't find jobs. So they tryna find niggas to rob, tryna find bigger guns for them to finish the job. Beef is when the crack babies can't find moms, cause they in a pine box, I lock behind bars. Beef ain't the summer jam for Hot 97. Beef is the cocaine and AIDS epidemic. Beef don't come with a radio edit. Beef is when the judge is calling you defendant. Beef, it come with a long jail sentence, handed down to you in a few short minutes. Come through for a visit to tell you how she pregnant by some other nigga. Beef is high blood pressure and bad credit. Need a loan for your home, but you're too broke to get it. And all your little kids doing is getting bigger. You trying not to raise them around these wild niggas. Beef is when a gold nigga got your seat in a manicure hand out like, pay me, nigga. Oh, I'm telling your wife for starting up some foul rumor that to ruin your life. Beef is when the gangster ain't doing it right. Another gangster's undecided what to do with his life. Life. not what these famous niggas do on the mic. Beef is what George Bush would do in the fight. Beef is Miss Wallace, still don't know who shot Biggie. And beef is well done, Irv not being here with me. When a soldier ends his life with his own gun, beef is trying to figure out what to tell his son. Beef is oil prices and geopolitics. Beef is Iraq, the West Bank, and Gaza Strip. Some beef is big and some beef is small, but charcoal beef is not beef at all. No, beef is real life happening every day, and it's realer than the songs that you gave to K. Slay.
Kids, Finn's Revolution, right here on WUSB Stony Brook, taking you to the 9 o'clock hour, giving away some great tickets to a whole bunch of stuff. Stay tuned for a whole bunch of great new music, some great old music, and summer in general as it approaches us. Stay tuned, kids.
Gave to me by my change, no change.